This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Susan Inman's recent memoir, After Her Brain Broke, Helping My Daughter Recover Her Sanity, describes her family's 9-year-long journey to help her younger daughter, Molly, recover from a catastrophic schizoaffective disorder. Dr. Daniel Kalla, an ER physician at Vancouver's St. Paul's Hospital, describes the book as a harrowing, heart-wrenching, and ultimately triumphant story of one family's struggle with a child's mental illness. I'm joined on the phone by author Susan Inman. Welcome to People First Radio, Susan.
I'm happy to be here.
Susan, early in your book, after Molly unexpectedly rages down the stairs, you and husband Peter step into the kitchen to whisper about her Paxil medication. And then later you write, "We are suddenly learning new skills. Our kids kept being cooperative as they grew up. Together," and you're referring to yourself and Peter here, "we believe that our sensitive affirmation of our children and their evolving needs is all that is required." Tell us how Molly's emerging illness challenged you as a parent.
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I think it challenged us in every dimension. We really did believe that pretty much child rearing and how people turn out is all about nurture. And I think a lot of people in my generation, I'm a boomer, believed that the experiences that a child has are really absolutely the most fundamental shaping forces. And it was a really big wake-up call to us that for these illnesses, that's really not the case. Absolutely, we have choices about how we respond, but these are real brain disorders that present really complicated challenges to families, and they certainly did to us. So part of it was just the falling apart of a whole belief system about how the world works.
The book carefully documents your experiences in trying to find help for Molly, and one of the early challenges you faced when you managed to get an appointment with a child psychiatrist in Vancouver, and you mentioned that was very difficult, was a type of negotiation between parent, child, and doctor about a therapist you call Veronica. So I guess my question would be, what was it like for you to try to incorporate Molly's desires and decisions into your responses to her illness?
This was very complicated and was really one of the most painful aspects in the launching of the illness. And the illnesses are so painful and chaotic in themselves, but these kinds of issues are really unnecessary. And one of my goals in the book is to alert people to this. There are many people out there who are therapists of some kind or another, as Veronica is, who really don't have any training in serious mental illnesses and can do much more harm than good. And that was the case with Molly. We eventually understood that as these various symptoms were developing, Molly was receiving really difficult messages with this therapist. We had sent Molly to a therapist because she'd experienced some bullying in elementary school, and we really thought that a counselor therapist would have good strategies to help her be more assertive and hold her own on the playground. And we really were utterly naive. This relationship went on for several years. And basically, as various symptoms emerged, and even once there was a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, the therapist continued to have Molly believe that there was some great secret in her family, and once they could get to it, these things would resolve themselves. This was an unbelievable, destructive belief, and, you know, there was certainly no secret to discover, but it created a terribly painful alienation for Molly from her family, who were really her major supports in life. And it took a while to get this back. And we were lucky that we had a very astute child psychiatrist in terms of these issues. And we probably gave in to Molly's wishes to not separate from Veronica for too long, even when we could see this woman was really ignorant and dangerous. But it was a complicated transition, and once we did have Molly just seeing the child psychiatrist, this alienation soon faded, and he basically said to us it was like working with somebody who was brainwashed. Mm. Molly was convinced there was something that we had done that made all of this happen to her, and it took a while to just help her begin to understand that wasn't the case.
In the chapter you've called Breakdown, you write, "The unscientific approach to understanding serious mental illness not only deprived patients of truly helpful treatments, but devastated families with unjustified blame." And I'm wondering if you could comment just a little more broadly on that, on the experience that you were just speaking about.
Well, we were lucky in that the first this child psychiatrist who replaced Veronica introduced us to Nancy Andreasen, her seminal work, The Broken Brain, and all of the neurobiological approaches to understanding these disorders. There was not a hint of family blaming from him. Certainly, if we look at the history of 20th century psychiatry, that was the standard. And it was only in the late 20th century that the American Psychiatric Association, the Canadian Psychiatric Association, really got on board about schizophrenia and bipolar disorder being neurobiological disorders. And there, because genetics doesn't account for everything, although a lot in trying to understand how these illnesses develop, because environment must play some factor, I think it's really easy for people who haven't wanted to switch paradigms or people who haven't wanted to update their education to consider that still somewhere in there it must be the family. And, you know, environmental factors include things like getting the flu during pregnancy, the age of the father's sperm. Older fathers statistically tend to have, unfortunately, a higher rate of children who develop schizophrenia. Head injuries actually are a real problem. So there's a number of environmental factors. And really, I haven't come across, and E. Fuller Torrey, the research psychiatrist I think of as the most knowledgeable, hasn't come across any data that really says, you know, this is some kind of faulty child rearing that makes people go on to develop schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. Nevertheless, as you're saying, this shadow is there for families, and it was certainly there in some interactions we had with mental health professionals. But we have been very lucky in terms of being able to go and find psychiatrists who we knew didn't operate from that belief system.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm Kevin. Susan Inman has written a memoir that describes the experiences her family went through as daughter Molly became catastrophically ill with mental illness. The book is called After Her Brain Broke, Helping My Daughter Recover Her Sanity. And Susan Inman is on the line with us today. Susan, you describe how Molly's connections to the world around her withered. You wrote, "Some deep force of nature is dragging her away from the world around her. She is disappearing more and more from herself and her life." And you went on to describe your own experience. "My broken heart is becoming harder to control. I start weeping at inconvenient times and places. When I allow myself to picture how Molly was and how little is left of her, I wail." Tell us about the grief that comes with this kind of experience.
I was totally unprepared for this kind of grief because it was as if there was almost the shell of Molly. And she, by the end of what became a 2-year psychotic episode, she could hardly speak. She hardly responded to anything that was said to her. She was just not present, but clearly terribly bothered by atrocious delusions she was having about the world. During the second year of her psychosis, we realized we could never, even though she was 16, we could never leave her alone in the house because she had such terrible cognitive loss, she might put a cup in the microwave for 30 minutes instead of 30 seconds. Or she could remember that she wanted to take a bath, and she would turn on a faucet and wander away, and the tub could overflow. And she also couldn't be outside by herself because she couldn't remember, oh, right, you have to stop at the street and look to see if cars are coming. So I had not understood the terrible toll that just basic thinking processes can happen. These processes can be really terribly impacted in schizophrenia. So my grief was just really huge. And I know, unfortunately, people who have had children die, and it's just been really awful for them. And once I began to explore the literature while Molly was so ill, people talked about this grief as just the grief that doesn't fade, because the person is there and you desperately want to help them come back to their life, and so often families feel helpless. Fortunately, our efforts to just keep working on the medication issue proved that Molly did not have an untreatable psychosis, and with a medication change, Molly came back to life, mm-hmm. even though her prognosis had been so grim. So she has been in the process since that horrific 2-year psychotic episode of rebuilding her life.
Now, you also speak about the inadequacies of the healthcare system. As you move along through your experience, we just have a moment left here. I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about that experience and that part of the book.
I really wish that people would understand that families are the natural allies of people who develop serious mental illnesses. And for those of us who've had family members who develop other illnesses, we are treated that way as allies. But so often families are really treated with suspiciousness, and their efforts are undermined. Really, this needs to be a collaborative effort to get the best outcome for people who are living with serious mental illnesses.
And you mentioned that Molly is doing much better today. And as I read the book yesterday, I noted toward the end that she was taking courses at college. How have those turned out?
Molly is a student at Langara, and she takes one course at a time. Molly actually had a relapse this fall. The book had been finished last spring, and Molly's very excited about the book and feels justifiably that it celebrates what she has gone through. She's pulling out of this relapse with some medication change. You know, recovery doesn't necessarily mean cure, and she knows she's living with really difficult illnesses, but she is amazing in her determination to just carry on. And she loves school.
Thank you, Susan Inman, for taking the time to join us. I really appreciated that.
Thank you, Kevin.
Susan Inman has written articles on topics related to serious mental illness for a variety of Canadian publications, including the Globe and Mail, the Vancouver Province, and the online journal The Tyee. She continues to participate in public speaking about the experiences of families dealing with serious mental illnesses. Susan Inman's recent memoir, After Her Brain Broke, Helping My Daughter Recover Her Sanity, is available at Amazon.ca. And chapters.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society, CHLY, 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.